Hey, this is Troy Gwynn of the NashyCast. I want to welcome you to the Time Shifters Podcast. This podcast takes a fun look at the films of long past, recent past, and the almost present, as well as the events and news surrounding them. Your hosts, Christopher and Matt, would love to hear from you, and there are several ways you can get in touch with them. Look for the Time Shifters Podcast group on Facebook. Follow the two on Twitter. Christopher is at Time Shifters Pod, and Matt is at Movies at the Mat. Or you can send them a typed or recorded message to timeshifterspodcast@gmail.com. If you haven't already, you can subscribe to this show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, and Spotify. Please rate and review the show at any of these outlets. And now from the Time Shifter Studio, here are Christopher and Matt.
Everyone, yep, and welcome back to Time Shifters. We are in studio in a little bit of an open mic because we got something special. Matt has not only probably brought some news and his synopsis and everything, he's also brought a friend to join us for this discussion today. So I guess we'll go ahead and introduce. Matt, I'll let you introduce him. Go ahead.
So this is my friend Andy, who I have known for a very long time. We first met 16 some odd years ago playing games online together.
Sweet. Nice.
He is the longest tenured friend in my life. And yeah, we joined like the same online gaming guild, and he has been the annoying presence in my life ever since.
Nice. You can't ask for a better friendship than that.
Exactly. So, Andy, how's it going?
It's going good. I hope you can hear me all right. Yeah, Matt has that pretty accurately. He is also one of my longest running friends, and you know, one of the things that really keeps our relationship so strong is probably only seeing each other face to face once every 10 years or so. So it's effective, but you know, we still keep in touch pretty regularly.
Excellent. Yeah, you can't always see the faces you make when you're typing out emails and messages.
Yeah. Actually, I think the last time we saw each other face to face was my wedding.
Wow.
Yes, where I broke a chair and...
You did break a chair.
Anything to get attention. Anything to bring attention my way, I'll do it. Sure, why not? Break a chair by grandma? Sure.
Well, excellent. Well, thank you very much for joining us here on Time Shifters. I think that you'll definitely add... So you guys, I can tell, are going to, you know, I'm just going to sit back. And
it's a love-hate relationship over here.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Love, hate between you two? Or between you and me?
Between you and me.
But I love you. You hate me now? No, I'm not hanging up. Where's the hang-up button? If I can find the hang-up button on this control board, I'd hang up right now.
Well, thank gosh you can't.
Exactly.
Well, before we get started, I wanted to mention that I have tied Time Shifters into a sort of a networking group on Twitter. So we are officially kind of part of the hashtag Pod Nation. It's just a group of podcasts that have kind of come together to help promote each other's shows, you know, with the retweets and shares and comments and likes and that sort of thing. And support each other as new episodes come up. And then I guess, you know, also as a troubleshooting if anyone has any issues and that sort of stuff and everything.
Nice.
So there's about 30, 40 shows or so, you know, part of this group. So, yeah, so just search for hashtag Pod Nation. You know, find all kinds of podcasts of all sizes and kinds and subject matters and everything. So should be fun. We'll see how it works. Right now, it just completely blows up my Twitter with the direct messages with everybody commenting. It turns into this giant conversation about everything. And you get up in the morning and you look, you have 57 messages.
It's overwhelming.
So mute.
Yeah.
I have to like mute it for about 8 hours at a time. And then I catch up when it starts blowing up again, I'll read through and catch up, but it should be fun. It should help get us a little bit more exposure and then help us do the same for some other shows.
Cool.
Little bit of news. I'll start with the sad stuff first. A week or so ago, at the time of this recording, Sid Haig passed away. He became a horror icon after Rob Zombie cast him in House of a Thousand Corpses.
Yeah.
And then had the sequel to that, or I might have the film backwards, but he came up in the 70s. He started, I think, Spider Baby was his first film in 67 or so. And then through the 70s, he was just a character actor, always playing the thug or the heavy, but just one of those kind of iconic film personalities. I mean, the time that he came up in acting, he could only play the bad guy. You were never going to see Sid Haig as a good guy. It was one of those names that would come up in the credits, and I'd be like, oh, I know who the bad guy is. So it was very sad. From what I understand, he took like a bad fall or had some sort of physical accident and ended up in the hospital, and his health just declined from there, and he passed away. So, you know, hearts out to his family and so all the rest of his fans. He'll be sorely missed. I always liked seeing him come up. He also did a children's television show as the villain, but he was in Jason of Star Command as the evil Dragos. And that's probably my first exposure to Sid Haig, whether before I knew who Sid Haig was. So yeah, he's been in my life for a long time. So it's sad to see him go. Mm. Another bit of news I saw, I don't know if you saw this, Ruby Rose just had surgery.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
She
had an accident with one of the stunts while filming Batwoman. And it ended up, she was facing paralysis. She had a couple herniated discs that were threatening to sever her spinal cord. And so she went and had that taken care of and really kind of interestingly had the surgery videoed.
Yeah.
You could watch like this sort of truncated version, and it's a little graphic, but you could watch it. And I loved her comment on Instagram. People ask me, why did I let him film it? She's like, did you not see the Grey's Anatomy where they left a towel in somebody?
Yeah, you want that evidence.
Exactly.
So many things had to be signed for that to happen.
Close call. I mean, she just kind of starts out in the Batwoman and almost turned into the trying to retell Oracle.
Right. Yeah,
so that's just really just a great example of why we don't actually have superheroes in the real world. Because even the people pretending to be superheroes can't keep themselves from getting hurt.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, a real Batman would be dead inside of a month.
Yeah.
He'd jump off the building and that's it.
Yeah.
What? Throwing a line at terminal velocity doesn't work?
Yeah, so I'm glad it looks like it's all, you know, she's recovering and, you know, she's going to be all right. So, you know, thank goodness, because, I mean, they were right in the middle of filming the first season or just ended. I guess she kept working.
Yeah.
Yeah, the surgeon let her keep working to finish filming, I think, until they could finally actually do the surgery and give her recovery time. So I'm assuming they filmed the first season and had to wait till the hiatus or something before they could actually do the surgery. So, like, eek.
Right. And that was probably what was threatening her health more than anything, was it's like, you have this, we can take care of it. Right. But I'm going to keep doing all of this physical work for the next X amount of times. Like, that's probably more dangerous than anything.
Yeah. That's probably one of those things that, okay, yeah, you can work. But if you get hit the wrong way one more time,
you're done.
You're not going to be able to walk.
Yeah.
There are people that go home from work because they have a paper cut. You really got to give her a hand for sticking it out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think at the time of this recording, that premieres tonight, actually, on the CW. So,
and I heard that show got added to the crossover. So the crossover is now five episodes long.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome.
It was originally just going to be the four shows, and now it's all five. It's going to be insane.
Nice.
And did you see the picture of Brandon Routh in his Superman?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Best Superman outfit for live action I have ever seen.
Yeah, it's going to be, this crossover is going to be amazing. Go ahead, Andy.
Have you seen the photos with Tom Welling?
Yes.
Yes, that's what I'll be looking forward to. I haven't really seen too many of the newer series, but Smallville, that was my jam. Love Smallville.
Sweet. I can't believe all the stuff, what they're pulling out and all the people. We've talked about it before on the show, and we're going to start sounding like, you know, repeats. But, yeah, I just can't wait.
I can't either. Yeah, it's going to be wonderful. And that there's going to be three episodes, a month break, and then the last two episodes.
Well, with everything that they're throwing at this thing, you may actually need that break to sort of, like, catch your breath.
Yeah, so five episodes each are like 42 minutes. Like, this is going to be this is a mini series at this point. It's going to be wonderful.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. Speaking of mini series, that was the other thing I had. I saw there was a trailer for the BBC is going to be doing a War of the Worlds series.
Oh.
And it's actually going to be a period and place series. So it's actually going to be in, like, you know, the 1800s, when the actual the novel was set. Mm. And it's going to be a period piece in England, you know, not in America, not in New Jersey or whatever, where the film was. The trailer came out. Looks pretty incredible.
Nice. No one's ever done that before.
There was a direct-to-video version that was supposedly period piece, but it's like almost unknown. I mean, the article that I was reading said, oh, this is the first time. And someone else was like, oh, what about this? I'm thinking, yeah, but I don't know if that counts.
Please tell me Tom Cruise is going to be in it.
No.
Please.
No, absolutely not.
Oh, come on. Please let him ruin more movies.
So I'm really excited to see this because the BBC does not do anything poorly, especially when it comes to period dramas or anything. And this is going to be exciting. Yeah, this is going to be pretty cool. They actually say call it a series, but I'm guessing it'll probably be more like a mini series. Mm. We'll see what they plan on doing with it.
Right.
But yeah, it looked really cool. So I'm looking forward to that.
End of the world stuff should never linger because after a while it's like, okay, the world's still over.
Yeah. You get into the walking, still walking, still walking dead. Right. Yeah.
Two spinoffs later.
Yeah, exactly. I thought there was something else I wanted to bring up, but I'm blanking on what that is now.
Something to do with...
Yeah, I don't know what it was.
Well, I know a while back we had mentioned that they were working on rebooting the movie Clue.
Yeah.
And now Jason Bateman is attached.
Mm-hmm.
And Ryan Reynolds is confirmed. And that's a good combo.
That is not bad.
Yeah. I keep saying they need to do completely different but still have multiple endings.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would be fun. Oh, it'd actually be fun if they did it the same way they did with the original Clue, which depending on the theater you went.
No, I wouldn't like that. No one would like that. That was one of the reasons that didn't do well, is people got upset at that. Because then it's like, how many times do I have to see it? How do I figure out which one? Do I have to go to a completely different theater?
Yeah, but now with the different home endings. Video and everything.
That's a later thing.
Yeah, okay.
It didn't work then. It's not going to work now. Right.
Fair enough.
I don't think I've watched any of these movies based on board games. I'm avoiding pretty much all of them.
Clue is amazing.
Hungry Hippos, the movie comes out. I want nothing to do with it.
That has been talked about.
So you never saw Clue with Tim Curry and that wonderful cast?
Bits and pieces on TV when I was a kid, but it never caught my interest. And, you know, Clue was the game that we had, and we kept it in the closet. We never took it out because my family couldn't deal with that.
Huh.
It was way too much conflict. We would have killed each other somewhere around the house with random pieces of furniture. So it's probably better off that we didn't play that game. And, I skipped Battleship. I won't even watch Jumanji. Don't base my movies on a board game.
Well, Jumanji's based on a book where they made up a board game.
Yep.
You know, even the fictional board game, I want nothing to do with it. I don't want it.
Fair enough. I actually really enjoyed it. The first Jumanji I thought was good, but I really enjoyed the
video game one.
The video game one.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, no, yeah. Uh-huh. Well, now the sequel's coming out, and it looks like it. I don't know about the sequel. I really like the whatever the heck they call it, the Jumanji video game movie. I don't forget. It had a subtitle, I'm sure. I don't remember what it was.
I would definitely watch a horror movie based on the old board game Don't Wake Daddy.
That? That would be good.
That would be a suspenseful thriller. Like a good hour and a half. Definitely, I'd watch that.
Children creeping around a house.
Yeah, just petrified that they're going to wake up their dad because they're trying to go to the bathroom or get a peanut butter sandwich.
You do sort of like a The Thing tie-in for Don't Break the Ice.
There you go.
And pretty soon on Sci-Fi Original, I'm sure there's got to be like Ants and Pants or something like that.
Since we last recorded, the ongoing back and forth about Spider-Man and the MCU has been resolved. Yeah, Holland is back in the Marvel Universe.
That was one of the other articles I was thinking.
Yeah.
And
apparently they're saying he had a lot to do with it, that he was on the phone with both Disney and Sony to try to figure this out. And I don't know how much that's true. it just sounds like a really good spin that makes everybody look good. It's like, oh, these two mega studios that were all consumed with greed got their heads turned by the guy who plays the hero became a hero. Like,
right.
Everybody looks good coming out of that.
Yeah. No, I think it was more of a case that Sony and Marvel both looked at the big buckets of money that they were making and finally decided, well, maybe one more.
But the thing,
because the third Spider-Man movie is usually where they really start to get things right.
In some instances, they don't even get that far.
Yeah.
But the thing that's interesting is they've now said that Tom Holland will be in both universes as different versions of the same character. So it really is that it's a Spider-Verse now.
Interesting.
Yeah, so he could die in one universe and then Miles Morales can come and then there could be another crossover. And
interesting.
You could do any number of things.
They should just make another Into the Spider-Verse and just have live-action Tom Holland acting along like a Roger Rabbit kind
of. Why not?
There you go. There's his third movie right there.
I actually like that idea. You get the same people involved that did the Into the Spider-Verse and do something like that. I'd be in for it. That'd be cool.
Yes, my money would already... Just take my money.
Yeah.
And I will watch that.
I've already accepted Spider-Ham. Why not? Yeah. Why not Toon Spider and Real Life Spider? I'm good.
Do it.
That's all I got.
I think there was something else. There was... I have watched a couple movies, finally.
Mm.
I finally watched X-Men Dark Phoenix. Boring. Oh my God, that film was so boring. It's like an action film, and I'm bored. No action film should be boring. I should at least be going, hey, that was a cool stunt. That was a neat shot. No, nothing. Boring.
Didn't you even feel like the actors were bored?
Yes.
Like Magneto did not look like he even knew why he was in the movie.
You know, I couldn't figure it out. I can't figure it out because the first film, the X-Men First Class, I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed everyone that was in it. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow, this is great. This is great casting. I am on board with everybody in here. Days of Future Past, I'm still with it. I'm still excited about everyone who's doing their character. You know, all the actors and all their characters. I love it. We get to this film. I hate every single one. I walk into this film going, God, this is miscast. These people are awful. I don't know what happened in the course of these four films. I couldn't stand anybody.
and don't even bring up, what was it, X-Men Apocalypse? I don't think you even remember what happened in that one.
I honestly don't.
I'm pretty sure Papa Smurf showed up. He got really mad, and then they fought him in a dream world, I think, is how it ended.
I don't recall that. I have no idea. Nope, don't remember.
I did see it, but I got nothing.
Yeah. And I did finally...
I was just amazed to find out that the same guy that plays Poe in Star Wars is the same guy that played Apocalypse. I was like, really?
Yeah.
That guy? No.
And I finally got around to watching Endgame.
How'd that hit you?
It was okay. It was fine. It wasn't as boring as X-Men Dark Phoenix, but it was fine. I felt it was very orchestrated to get you to feel, you know, certain things at certain times, and I'll admit that it followed. Okay. Feel sad here. I did. I felt sad. You know, even though I knew what was going to happen, I was like, okay, yeah, I don't know. That's sad. You played the right violins or whatever. be excited here. Like, okay, yeah, that's pretty cool. There are some things I regret not seeing on the big screen. Probably would have been a little bit more impressed. As it is, I kind of felt like I've already seen this in the last movie, but it was fine. I thought, you know, if this was their kind of big finale after all the buildup of all these years from Iron Man and going all the way up. Yeah, okay. It was all right.
For me, I really like it as a big finale. It just, as a movie, it can't stand on its own legs. You have to have all of that previous knowledge. Whereas a lot of their great movies, you could just pop in that movie by itself to someone who's never seen any of it, and it's a great movie.
Right.
Whereas with this, you kind of have to give somebody like a bunch of cliff notes mm-hmm. just to be like, so this is why this is important. Right. This is why this is a big moment for Thor. This is why this is a big moment for Captain America. And then the only other thing in that movie that I'm like, why didn't they do that? Why didn't they have even just one quick 20-second moment, a glance between Tony and Bucky? Those two don't interact once at all.
Hmm.
Could have been a moment where, like, Tony is about to die on the battlefield and Bucky saves his life. All is forgiven for past transgressions.
Right. Nothing.
The whole reason the team broke up was because of him.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. Something.
No resolution there. Right. No. Yeah, it was just, I just found it to be okay.
I liked it. I mean, it was a good continuation. Matt's absolutely right. You have to have been following it for the past 10 years from the very beginning. You could skip a few. You could skip Thor 2. You didn't need it.
No.
See, I disagree with that because Thor 2 is where his mom dies. Like, you really need to understand the beats of every single previous movie to follow the finer details of Infinity War and Endgame put together, where it's like you could be told his mom died, but you really see Thor go through an arc from Dark World all the way through Endgame, dealing with his constant loss, dealing with his depression. That's what gets him there into Endgame. So that scene he has with his mom hits harder when you know what he went through, when you saw what he went through in Dark World.
It does hit hard. It does give it more of an impact, I agree. However, I mean, that movie, The Dark World, was kind of so forgettable that it required certain segments of Endgame for Thor to kind of explain what that movie was about. Like, it's like, yeah, I know the audience doesn't remember, so let's take a few minutes and remind the audience. And he goes off and just tells everyone. He basically gives the plot details for Thor 2 in Endgame.
Well, there you go. It was all part of the plan.
I did have a friend who, he was trying to avoid all the spoilers, all the everything, and months went by. He only saw it, like, last week, and he of course, he found some of the biggest spoilers, and because I tried to be a good friend, I kept trying to tell him that all the spoilers that he had found out were absolutely wrong. He's like, oh, I heard this person did this. I'm like, nope, fake news. That didn't happen. That's only in the trailer, man. That didn't happen in the actual movie. So I tried to preserve his newfound discovery of the movie, but unfortunately, spoilers were tough for this movie.
Yeah, I tried to avoid as much as I could, but all you had to do was find just the right meme that
right.
It doesn't explicitly say what happened, but it's like, oh, that's okay.
Even the advertising after like the first month, they started putting the bigger, you know, action set pieces and reveals in their advertising to get more people to go.
Or the extended trailers for Spider-Man Far From Home
right.
kind of gave spoilers of Endgame mm-hmm. away. So, yeah, you couldn't. It was very difficult to avoid. Yeah, but that's I think that's all I got. It's all the news and everything you got?
Yep.
All right, excellent. So we'll take a quick break here. And when we get back, we're going to talk about, was it 2010? Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Everyone, I am Rod Barnett.
I'm Troy Gwynn.
And we are your hosts for NashyCast, the podcast about the films of Paul Nashy. We, for over 5 years, have brought you the joys of Spanish cinema, filtered through our brains to you.
Yes, now, what is it that qualifies two Southern boys to talk about films that came out of Spain? And I can't think of a single thing.
There's nothing that qualifies.
Nothing. Except that we just love them.
We love them. NashyCast covers the films of Paul Nashy and any other Spanish horror film that we can pretend we know something about.
Yes. If you love beautiful women wearing incredibly short miniskirts in subarctic temperatures chased by werewolves in leisure suits.
If you love werewolves, vampires, unidentifiable beasts, or crazy people driving women around and talking like a maniac to them.
Yes, flying cats, beheadings with axes.
Blood that looks like melted crayons.
Shambling zombies, yeah.
Some of the films that we've covered in the past are Mark of the Werewolf.
Howl of the Devil.
Vengeance of the Zombies.
Horror Rises from the Tomb.
Tombs of the Blind Dead.
Vampire's Night Orgy.
Ooh, yes. Join us on this journey through the golden age of Spanish horror, where Paul Nashy, Leon Klimovsky, Jess Franco, Armando D'Osorio take us through a filter Espanol.
Join us for the NashyCast.
Are you looking for some great indie podcasts to listen to? Check out the Pod Nation list on podchaser.com, where you can find a list of great indie podcasts, get links to their official websites, and even listen to some of their episodes without needing to create an account or log in. So once again, for some great indie podcasts, check out the Pod Nation list on podchaser.com.
Okay, we are back. Matt, do you have a synopsis for Scott Pilgrim?
Written by Michael Bacall and Edgar Wright, directed by Edgar Wright, it's a classic story. Boy meets girl. Boy falls in love with girl. Boy must battle girl's seven evil exes and prove he has the better superpowers in a movie based on a comic book based on video games. That is this movie.
That sums it up. That absolutely sums it up. I was one of the last people in the world to have watched this movie.
I think you were the last.
I think there was one other person that
I saw it yesterday.
they went and saw it immediately, which made me the last. I don't know why I don't know. I don't know what it was. It was one of those films that I always heard people talking about, but I never really got the urge or the push from anyone to say, oh, you've got to see this. And so I didn't. So that will be a first time watch for me. You obviously have seen this multiple times.
Yeah, quite a bit.
Andy, what's your experience with this film?
I've seen the movie about three times. I read the entire series of books, but that was years ago. This was like around 2010. Michael Cera he was definitely pigeonholed as the guy who finds bad relationships or finds the wrong girl. Like, look at Arrested Development. He tries to date his cousin. Look at Juno. He got the wrong girl pregnant. You look at, what other movie was he in during that time? Youth and Revolt. I don't know if anyone remembers that movie.
With the mustache.
He picks the wrong girl. It's like, he just, that seemed to be what he did from 2008 to 2012.
But he was perfectly cast as Scott Pilgrim, because I'm actually just reading the books now, about halfway through, and that was, for the time, the perfect casting. Like, as I'm reading these books, I'm like, there was nobody else on Earth other than Michael Cera to play Scott Pilgrim. He's even drawn like him, even though the books came first. You look at it, you're like, that's his face. That's his hair.
That's cool. Yeah, I'm not familiar with the books whatsoever.
Yeah, graphic novel series by Brian Lee O'Malley. You know, all of those different little things in the movie, like the text popping up and like, you know, the P-bar and all of that. That's in the book. Like, they didn't make that up for the movie. Like, he puts in all of these funny little things in the books, and they're hilarious, and it just translates over perfectly for the screen.
Yeah, no, I did like all the sort of the nods to the graphic novel. So you feel like it's one of those films where you feel like you're watching a comic book.
Yeah,
definitely.
And so this was my first introduction to Edgar Wright, because I hadn't seen any of his previous work. I hadn't seen Shaun of the Dead or Hot Fuzz or any of that stuff. So I actually had to get dragged to this movie because I remember the trailers looked pretty boring. And I haven't rewatched them, but I just remember at the time being like, that movie doesn't look interesting. It's not like Michael Cera was the kind of guy to draw people out, even right, though yeah. he was perfect casting. He's not like this A-list star. You're like, oh, that's the kid from Superbad. I don't care. And he wasn't even the funny one from Superbad. There were like five people funnier than him. So, but I saw it and I go, wow, this movie is not even close to what the trailers made it seem like. The trailers that I can remember really played up the whole relationship side of things.
I was going to say, like, did they kind of hide the graphic novel elements?
They hid the comedy.
Yeah.
Like, if they played this up as the action comedy that it is, mm-hmm. I think everybody would have gone to see it because it bombed. It was made on like an $85 million budget and it only pulled in like $40 million.
Ouch. Yeah, that one stings.
Yeah.
So I'm having a hard time kind of wrapping my brain around my thoughts on this film because just 24 hours prior to me watching this film, I watched a movie that was based on a graphic novel that was, you know, starred a lot of attractive young people, that was over the top and gratuitous and everything. And I absolutely love it. And I watched this one and I was like, it's okay. But I can't figure out why one worked for me and this one didn't, when they both have, you know, the same ingredients went into both films. Hmm. And this one I just found to be Scott Pilgrim. It was fine. There was definitely moments. The cast was fantastic. I loved everybody in it. But just as a package, it was a movie. It was okay. It was very interesting. I'm having a real hard time kind of
Figuring out why
or working through why, what was it about this film that didn't pull me in, like, whereas the other one did. It's just, it's interesting. But yeah, the case.
Would it be all right to ask what the other movie that you viewed?
Yeah, you can. It's an oddball one. It was from, I think, 2009. It came out of Japan. It was called Vampire Girl versus Frankenstein Girl. And I figured,
well, how can you compare?
Yeah.
Versus Frankenstein Girl versus Scott Pilgrim versus the world. I mean, come on.
But I figured it was October. It's kind of like, it's that great little kind of Halloween theme. It's been a while. It may have been 2009, 2010 since I last saw it. So I thought I'll throw that in and watch that again. And I enjoyed it as much as I remember enjoying it the first time. Because it is, it's completely over the top. It's everyone's, no one's taking anything. They're taking it seriously, but they're not taking the, how do you put it? Everyone's having fun, mm-hmm. you know, within the film. And so, and that shows, and it's great. I just really enjoy it. Scott Pilgrim, I feel like everyone was doing the same thing. I don't think everyone was bored. I don't think anyone was phoning anything in. I think they were taking the material seriously. It just didn't strike me that it hit me the same way.
Okay. You mentioned the cast, and that's just something that I want to talk about because you mm-hmm. have so many people in this movie before they were famous. You know, Michael Cera's in it, but then you've got Anna Kendrick, you've got Aubrey Plaza, you've got Kieran Culkin, you've got Brandon Routh, you've got Brie Larson,
yeah.
who's probably the biggest star to come out of this. Mm-hmm. But they all still talk about this movie. They all still say how, like, you know, if a reunion were to happen, if there was a sequel, they'd be down for it. They nice. Loved their time on this movie. They loved working with Edgar Wright.
Yeah, good. Now, see, with Edgar Wright, I've actually seen Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. I saw those mm-hmm. before I saw this one. And I like those films. I never got around. Didn't he do the End of the World or what was the other?
The World's End.
The World's End. Was that him as well?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I haven't gotten around to seeing that one yet.
If I can make a recommendation, one of the first series that Edgar Wright directed was a show called Spaced. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
I've heard of that, yeah.
That show was amazing. You could tell that his eye for filmmaking kind of started there, and a lot of the stuff that shows up later in like Shaun of the Dead came directly from that show Space. Like, they had a zombie episode in in Spaced, where he got too into playing Resident Evil on his PlayStation, and then he thought everyone was a zombie. So I highly recommend, if you're going to go back, go get that show Spaced. It's amazing. It's so funny. And you'll see a lot of the same kind of the way he frames his shots, the way he does his scenes, very similar to the movies that he makes.
Excellent. Yeah, I'll have to check that out, because you're not the first person that I've heard recommend that. So that's definitely come up before.
Yeah, I watch it like once every 2 years or so. It's a short series because it's a British series, so mm-hmm. usually like one season is 6 episodes.
Right.
So it won't take you long to get through all 3 seasons.
Excellent. Good. Yeah, this cast, I don't think there was anybody in there that I would have wanted anyone else.
Yeah.
They were who was the actress that actually played Ramona?
Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
That's a name that I hadn't heard.
She's been in several things.
Yeah. It wasn't a name I was real familiar with, but I'm like looking at her in this film and it's like, she's amazing.
Yeah.
She does something that not a lot of actors can do. Is she's one of those people that can act without actually saying anything. Mm-hmm. You know, she does a lot of really good, like, face acting. She's always doing something. She's in that character, her mind, she's thinking as that character. You can see it on screen. And I really like that. Just the way her facial expressions, how she would act, what she would do. She was just a real natural at it and really did a nice job. But yeah, it was not a name I was familiar with.
She probably would have done well in the era of silent film, because she really does have a great way of expressing emotion without really saying much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she would have. Yeah, absolutely.
Great cast, interesting characters. Even if the movie didn't do it for you, other than her, did you have like a favorite character?
I was thinking about that, who I really, you know, it was actually, what was the drummer, Kim?
Kim.
I don't know why. I kept gravitating
that
to her.
Flat expression.
Yeah, exactly.
What? Kim and I are totally cool. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked her just simply, I'm just not going to take any shit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they try to go into the big conversation. It's like, time to practice. You know, click, click, click. I really liked her. I liked his roommate, Wallace.
Wallace is my favorite character in this whole movie. Kieran Culkin is hilarious, and he needs to be in more comedies. Just so many of the things that he comes up with is just wonderful.
He stole the show, man.
Yes!
I love this spinoff movie of just Wallace Wells and what he's doing for the rest of the week.
Yeah. Yeah. The way he starts hitting on... what's her face's boyfriend?
Stacy?
Yeah.
Was it Stacy was his sister?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, hey, man, what do you think of this band so far? They haven't played. That was a test. Very good.
It's not a race, guys. He did have the best lines in the movie, and he was so apathetic with the way he delivered everything. It was just so great.
Yes.
You know, he is the Culkin the world deserves. Yeah. He might not be the Culkin the world got, but it's the one we deserve.
Yeah. We're crashing the boys. Is that girl a boy? Yes.
The other thing I really appreciated and liked about this film is the most outrageous stuff is happening, but in this world...
Totally normal.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. People come crashing through the ceiling and have samurai fights. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Every day.
People explode into coins.
Yep. Every day. It just happens. Yeah. I like that.
I'm pretty sure that this movie, I've been thinking about it. I love thinking about different theories for movies. I'm pretty sure this movie does not take place on this Earth.
Yeah. I think it takes place inside a video game, and they're fully aware they are inside a video game.
This is a Wreck-It Ralph prequel.
Yeah, something like that. Like they get that they, you know, that as you move through, you're just actually leveling up and all of that stuff. Because the part where it's interesting reading the books and going through, because, you know, it's a pretty long graphic novel series, and seeing how they kept bits of dialogue but took from completely different scenes, because they're like, that's a good line, but we're not going to do all of this stuff. We're just going to take that line and move it over here for this scene. Because the part where, like, he keeps dreaming about Ramona, and he says to her, like, I had a dream about you. Now here you are. And she says, like, oh, yeah, that's just some, like, subspace that, you know, that goes through your brain that I use. The book expands upon that. And she's explaining to him, like, oh, yeah, there are these highways that go through people's minds. And it's like, okay.
Again, more proof that this is definitely not existing on a planet we live in.
Right. Right.
This movie takes place on the planet Canada.
Yeah, even that voiceover at the beginning is great. I kept waiting for that to come back, and then it doesn't. It comes back at that one point where it's like, you know, I don't know when I got my hair cut last. Scott remembers exactly when he had his last haircut. It was a mutual breakup. It wasn't. I'm right, fine. He's right. Not.
Maybe if the film was a little tighter, maybe a little shorter, did it need to be, you know, seven X's? Maybe they could have cut it down.
It is in the book.
I get the
uproar.
Yeah, that's true.
They did combine two of the X's.
Oh, they had the
twins, actually, I think, or... in the book they're combined too. I'm not up to that part yet. They did change one. They in the book it's ex boyfriends, and in this there's one ex girlfriend.
Ah, gotcha. Why don't I love this film? It has everything, this, you know, absurdist, surrealist quality that I usually just absolutely love when I see it in films. And in this one, I just kind of went, yeah, that was okay. Sarah might be perfectly cast, but I have to admit, I'm not a huge fan. I've seen a lot of the stuff he's done without even realizing it was him. I remember seeing Juno if you had asked me, I wouldn't have known that it was him that was in it. But he's all right. Yeah, but I'm like a fan of like everybody else that's in the film.
Yeah, it's the supporting cast that really, like, for me, props it all up. He's a very good lead, but it's just that he's Michael Cera. This is what you're going to get. You're going to get, you know, awkward guy
Yeah.
But that's who the character is. So it's almost interesting that you would center a story around someone like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. What else do you want to talk? That's where I knew I was going to be coming into this. And I'm like, I don't have much to say about this. I mean, I did like everyone in it. I liked some of the situations. I liked the graphic novel aspect of it. Maybe this is going to be one of those films, too, where I come back in a year or something and...
You either love it or hate it.
Yeah, and then I was like, "Oh my gosh, that's actually really funny." Maybe it's I don't know.
I love the camera work, and I love the quick cuts. Edgar Wright does this interesting way of telling a story visually. I remember coming across this YouTube video that talked about how he tells a story of, you know, that he doesn't necessarily like. If somebody has to travel somewhere, they're not going to take you on like a road. He's not going to take you on a road trip. He's going to show you like quick cuts of like sitting here and, you know, you can see what the sky is doing. And then you're there somewhere else. And now it's nighttime. And that all got told inside of 25 seconds. Right. And you understand how all of that works. And he does that in this too, where it's like, all right, I have to wait for a package. And then cut, 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 cut. Oh, and yeah, then the package arrives and he throws it over his shoulder. Want to go out on a date? And bam, they're out on the date. Mm-hmm. Things like that. And it just keeps... just bouncing around, but it does it in a way that doesn't feel abrupt to me. It's just that's his way of telling a story, which is perfect because that's how comic books are. You go right. from block to block to block to block.
Well, and it gives you a little bit of the comedic aspect of it, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, hey, Amazon CA, what's the address for that? Amazon CA? Hey, this thing's telling me I got email.
I'm happy for you.
Yeah. There, are you waiting for the package?
Yeah.
I like the fact that, too, that Wallace is the only one that actually... I think Wallace may be from our world.
Yes.
And somehow he found his way to this world.
It's better for him there.
Yeah. Like, yeah, you just ordered it. It's Saturday. It won't post till Monday. Ding dong! Package is here.
What did you...
want to discuss any, like, controversial stuff about the movie?
Go for
it. Anything that we noticed that... All right, so this was my... I watched it again about 2 weeks ago. And I've been taking some courses at my local college. That's where I'm at right now. I'm actually in the studio at the college that I go to. And I recently took a course on race and representation, which when you take this course, you can't really watch things the same way anymore because you start to see the lack of representation.
Yeah.
And on this planet, Canada, that the Scott Pilgrim cast seems to live in, did anyone else notice that there doesn't seem to be any black people on this planet?
Right.
Well, it is the Great White North.
Like, yeah, there's, let's see, Knives is a person of color, Matthew Patel, and then I think I'm out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there was people of Indian heritage, and they say that was it the Katanayagi, so I believe they're Japanese, but that's... Yeah,
there's
really not a lot of representation in that movie.
Nope.
Like, at all.
Mm-mm.
Which, watching it with this fresh set of eyes where I'm, like, looking for things like that, that stood out heavily for me.
Yeah.
And I started looking for articles to try and see if anyone else has even talked about this. And it turns out that the writer of the comic book, was it Brian
Lee O'Malley.
I think that, yeah. Even he has said himself that, yeah, this movie has very little representation. Even my comic, the books, very little representation, and that's one of the things he regrets about it. And but that really stood out to me when I was watching it the second time. I was like, wow, Canada is really, they really whitewashed the heck out of this Canada.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's a strange planet they're living on.
Well, you could even take that... now as you've talked about that and you think about her one ex-girlfriend and the way they kind of make it as a, like, it wasn't okay for her to experiment, you know.
Right. It was a phase.
It was just a phase. It didn't mean anything. Yeah.
Right.
And so, yeah, suddenly, yeah, the gay girl's the evil one.
Right.
And it's not okay for her to have had this same-sex relationship.
Mm-hmm. Like, why can't the character just be bisexual? And
right.
There we are.
Why couldn't she just said, yeah, what? So what?
Yeah.
Yeah, I dated a girl. Big deal. Yeah. Instead, she's like trying to like.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't think about that.
And let's not forget the ew factor of dating two twins at the exact same time.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, so yeah, there's a couple elements that you can look into that. If you want to look at that with a not even that fine of a tooth comb. Yeah, it's right. Definitely there.
It's right there. A lot of that has to say about like casting, Hollywood casting.
Sure.
Especially like this time period, like, because films used to have so much more representation in them. You used to have so many different diverse people being like your headline cast, you know, your main actors, you know, we don't have like a Jackie Chan anymore. Even though we have Jackie Chan, we don't have Jackie Chan anymore being like, oh yeah, go see his movie. It's right. It's going to be a great action movie and he's the lead.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, it really in like going into the 2000s, especially like up to this point, it was really, everything was getting whitewashed and no one really knows what that turning point was. Like, you know, I don't think Will Smith would get cast today as a leading man coming up out of nowhere.
Right.
You have to have the 30 history. Years yeah. of being around and being an actor for him to be the lead man anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, even think when he was a lead man, think of like Independence Day, which is probably one of the first films that really put him on the map or whatever. Sure, he's kind of like the lead, but it's the white guys that save the day kind of thing. Mm. You know, it's the white guy that comes up with the computer program. It's the white guy that finally, you know, blows up the mothership and everything.
So, he's there.
But look, yeah, there's the black man. He's there.
Right.
We have
he's
one.
He's flying the ship. Right. Yeah.
So he's the chauffeur.
Pretty much. Yeah.
The one who had the ability to get them to the alien ship, they wouldn't have been able to get the pilot that ship without Will Smith.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So they needed him. They have a term for that in my race and representation class, but I don't know if I can say what that term is with the requirements.
Say of it. Show. No, it's fine.
Oh, they call that when you have a character that is a black character in a typically all white cast, and they have the magical solvent to everything. They call that the magical Negro.
Yeah,
that's the term for it. And Will Smith kind of fit that in Independence Day in a while, because he's the only one that could fly that ship. Without him, they're not going to save the world. It's over.
Yeah. Right.
So they. Yeah, I paid real close attention in that class. You can't watch anything anymore.
No, I'm with you on imagine. That.
Yeah,
because I've been following a lot of different film critics and a lot of different film critics who are not white, and so like on Twitter and whatnot, and they point this out, and I've been reading up on this like the last 3 years, and yeah, it really affects how you like go back and watch something, or when you learn about things like the Bechdel test, and you're like, oh wow, how many movies don't pass the Bechdel test and things like that.
Oh my God, I can't watch the movie Sister Act ever again. It's over. Or part two. And that's when it really started getting going, too.
Yeah.
No, ruined. Ruined forever.
Sometimes we can just learn too much.
We can. I want to go back to being
ignorant.
Naive sometimes.
Yes. Now it's the like naive movie watcher.
Back to it. Can't go back. There's no turning back.
But I think it's a good conversation to have. I think it's a healthy conversation to have, so long as, like, you know, nobody gets it. The important thing is to avoid being defensive. Like, the thing is to listen and be open to those things, and then that's when you're going to get a more diverse cast and you're going to have a better experience.
Absolutely. And as a movie goer, you can point that stuff out. You can say, look, I'm not saying it wasn't a fun movie or whatever. I'm just pointing that this happened, you know, this was going on in that movie. I'm not saying it wasn't, you shouldn't watch it. I'm not saying it shouldn't be great or anything, or be, you know, Academy Award, whatever, but just pointing this out.
Right.
Or maybe next time.
Right. Let's learn.
Yeah. Should we try to wrap it back to Scott Pilgrim a little bit?
Okay. Yeah. I can certainly bring a party down, can't I?
No, it's a good discussion to
Absolutely.
Have. The only other scene that I really want to talk about, well, actually, no, there's two, because here was the other actor I forgot to mention, you know, don't know if you've heard of him, Chris Evans?
Yeah, something, what was he in? Yeah, yeah. I think he was just in something I watched recently. I don't know.
He still references this movie where somebody, shortly after, because there was some other, it was some, like, teen movie that he was in where his character, it might have been like not another teen movie, where his character like walks up, he's in high school and he sees a picture of himself and he like looks at it with the same expression that he has in the picture and he smiles and then he walks away. Somebody edited that shot where he's looking at Captain America's ass.
It's America's ass.
Right. And so that person posted it. He replied to it and said, that's actually hilarious, quoting this movie.
That's great. Was he in Not Another Teen Movie?
I think so. I think that was him. That or it was some other movie a lot like it, but I'm pretty sure that was him.
Interesting. Yeah, that was one of the few modern spoof films that I actually think are pretty half decent.
Yeah.
No, and that's something, I mean, Chris Evans was probably 2010, his star had already started to rise, I think, by then. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I like when actors kind of like do something like this. Let's just have some fun kind of role. Then everyone else, they're all names that you now know or have been in some pretty major films and everything that maybe in 2010 was just, they were in Toronto at the time. Mm-hmm. They were in Canada, so... Yeah, need a job? Here you go.
Right.
Especially someone like Brie Larson, who I'm sure, I don't know if I heard her name until at least 2012,
right around where she won her Academy Award.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, came out of nowhere and Brie Larson. Yeah.
I think for a good chunk of time, anytime someone said the name Brie Larson, I mentally pictured Allison Brie.
Oh, yeah.
So it took me a while to even figure out who they were talking about. But yeah, Brie Larson's, she's pretty awesome. She's pretty great.
And that's her singing in this movie.
Really?
That is her. Yeah, she can sing.
I'll be damned. I had no idea. Just went up another notch.
Uh-huh. She can do pretty much everything.
Research. Turns out that Michael Cera, I had no idea. He actually plays like a bunch of different instruments, and he does tour with some bands from time to time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he's actually a pretty musical guy. So that actually, I read that after seeing the movie, and I was like, oh, man, so that's why he seems so comfortable jamming on a bass. He knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah, I will say this, that I may actually dig up the soundtrack for those films. I think the soundtrack would be absolutely fantastic.
I have the soundtrack. It's so good.
Yeah, whereas I'm kind of lukewarm on the film. I loved the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. The music, every time they played any music, I'm like, I'm into this.
I'm so sad that, like, Sex Bob-omb is not a real band that puts out albums every few years. Mm-hmm. Like, the four or five that are out there, I have all of those songs. They are part of my shuffle. After I saw this movie, I was like, well, Electric Mayhem is no longer my favorite fictional band. Like, it is now Sex Bob-omb.
Yeah, they were awesome.
If it was real, you'd think Nintendo would have shut that down just like, no.
Probably.
Reminds me of that band. Remember the band Green Jello? Remember them?
Mm-mm. No.
That might be going back. This is going back to the 90s. They're not called Green Jello anymore because the company that owns Jello, I think it might be Kraft or something, they didn't like so much that their title was being. So the band's name is now Green Jelly. They actually. If you go real back, you go check out your old retro games, pull out the game Maximum Carnage, which was a Venom and Carnage video game, Spider-Man game.
I remember that one.
Green Jelly. If you look at the intro, they did all the music
nice.
For that game. And you'll see their logo pop up before any of the other logos in the game. But yeah, that's another example of, the company that owns that name. They're not going to let that fly.
No, that's funny.
Can I mention one scene in the movie that I thought was particularly interesting?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. The scene where Scott Spann's Sex Bob-omb is having the musical battle against the, and I'm probably destroying their names, but the Katanayagi twins?
Mm-hmm. The twins, anyway, yeah.
The twins. We'll call them the twins for now. If you've seen the movie, you probably know what I'm talking about. If not, picture whatever two twins you want to picture in your mind. So they're having this battle. And where am I going with this? So earlier in the movie, Scott is showing Kim how he can play like the bass lines to a Final Fantasy game. Mm-hmm. Do you call that at all? He's like, hey, check this out. I can play the bass line. And I thought it was really an interesting touch that when the band got together and had the fight, they were pretty much acting out a scene from an RPG. Their party summoned a beast. Kind of like in Final Fantasy, your party can summon a beast to fight against your enemy. And I found that really like the first time I saw that, I didn't get it. I was like, oh, okay, so they rock so hard that a monster shows up.
Mm-hmm.
But this, when I was watching it the other day, I was like, oh, man, they're totally playing into the JRPG trope of our party is going to summon a beast to fight against another party. And it added, like, a whole other level of, like, video game nerdiness to it that I didn't see. And I appreciate it. I was like, oh, my nerd alert's going on. Feel it. And it turns out that I really feel that that's what they were going for. The party was getting together and acting like an RPG, summoning a beast to fight a foe. I thought that was a really cool touch that didn't really... It goes so fast that you wouldn't even think about it. But the second time watching it, it became really obvious to me.
Nice.
Nice.
I wanted to bring that up.
No, I definitely think, depending... And maybe that's... maybe that's the thing with me is just how much you're steeped in the all the elements that go into this film. Maybe that has some bearing on it. If this were all done in the, I don't know, classic sci-fi films or something like that, I think I'd be like, oh, I know that reference, you know. So maybe I just, maybe the, some of that stuff just, it goes over my head.
Yeah.
And that's a possibility there.
I can see that.
Not being a huge gamer. I mean, I am not, I'll admit it. I'm not a huge gamer. I still sit here and putter around on my N64. That's the kind of gamer I am.
That's a good gamer to be, though.
There's nothing wrong with that. Can I ask, do you have a specific N64 game? What's your go-to?
I love, if I'm playing just a game by myself, I always throw in either probably Star Fox or occasionally GoldenEye.
Classics.
Yeah, both excellent games. Yeah. Excellent choices.
Now, if my son and I are sitting down and playing together, we really enjoy that V8 Vigilante. Yeah, I don't know if you know that. That's where you're some vehicle, a car with armaments, and you try to destroy the other guy.
Perfect.
Sounds like a good time to me.
Yeah.
Last thing I kind of want to say is that I really appreciate how different every single battle is. Like, they really could have just done the same thing every single time, but each one is unique. You know, sometimes he just beats the other person up. Sometimes he needs help. Sometimes he outsmarts them. Sometimes mm-hmm. he tricks them. Like, when he goes up against Brandon Routh, he can't win that fight. He can't beat him up. He can't outbase him.
I did like the vegan stuff.
The vegan stuff is hilarious. And he has to trick him. And then it's kind of right out of like Princess Bride of like, you think it's in that one, but I know it's in this one. And
yeah, actually, I poured it in this cup. I just thought really hard about pouring it in the other cup.
Yeah, that's a great moment. And then you get... what are their names? You get... Damn it. The
vegan
guy.
Police.
Yeah,
guys.
I know both of those actors. They're in a Thomas Jane and Clifton Collins Jr. That's who it is.
Okay.
And they just show up and I'm like, how did they get these two guys? They just show up for, I guess, one day. The vegan police.
Yeah. Well, this is my first offense. September 18th, you know, gelato. What? That's vegan?
It's milk and eggs.
It's milk and eggs, dude.
And then you also had chicken parmesan. Chicken's not vegan. Like, who's watching him? Like, the vegan police watch you 24/7.
No, I get, well, he's vegan. That makes him better than everybody.
He's like, no.
If he bites his nails, too.
My hair.
Is that a third strike?
What's that?
If he bites his nails.
Oh.
Yeah. That's a third strike. You can't be a vegan and be biting your nails at the same time, sir. You're out.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and then when he goes up against Lucas Lee, he does beat up all of Lucas Lee's stunt doubles, but then he tricks him into, you know, going down the rail, and that's he doesn't actually battle him. He just tricks him.
You trying to trick me into doing this stunt? There's girls watching.
Give me my board. And then there's Kieran Culkin. Here, big fan. Yeah. Stealing that moment.
Yeah, I agree with Andy. I would watch an entire movie of Wallace.
Wallace is great. I want to have his adopted babies.
We play a game where whenever we're watching, it's mostly my game. She doesn't want to play. But when we're watching a TV show or a movie, anything that is more interesting than the actual show, I'll be like, that's the spinoff. That's what I want to watch. I want to watch that. Like, we were watching, I'm not going to give too many spoilers away, but we were watching the most recent season of Stranger Things.
Mm.
And there's the interaction between the one kid, Dustin, and Mike Harrington.
Yeah.
And they're just talking about their hair and what they did that weekend, and I was like, spin off, watch that.
Just them talking about hair?
I was like, yeah, give me a spinoff of Dustin and Mike, and just call it Normal Things. Every week. And I would watch it. Put it on.
That'd be awesome. I can do like a little web series or something, maybe. A little goes along with it.
I'm constantly calling for spinoffs. I was like, this needs a spinoff. It's these two characters. like for definitely for Scott Pilgrim's, like I would follow, what was his name, Wallace. Or Kieran
Wallace Logan. Wells, gay roommate.
Yeah, I'd follow him around, just see what he's up to.
Mm-hmm.
Wallace versus the whatever he's doing today.
There was a ton. Even though as a whole, the film just kind of, you know, like I said, I was a little lukewarm on it. There are a lot of great scenes, you know, Stacy's boyfriend and Wallace. And
Wallace. And then when Scott gets home, Wallace is in bed with not one, but two other guys. It's like, what? Huh? Other Scott.
And they're all sharing that bed.
Right. Right. Because Wallace owns everything in the apartment.
I'm going to need the bed, you know, for sex. Yeah, I get the idea. Yeah. And tomorrow. And, like, for a year.
It's time to talk about you moving out.
Yeah, everyone was, even Knives, I think, was fantastic. The actress, what was her name? I don't know. Yeah,
I haven't seen her in anything else.
His fake 17-year girlfriend.
Yeah.
17-year-old girlfriend.
Got to break up with your fake high school girlfriend.
Would be the name of the actress who played Knives' child.
What was it?
Ellen Wong.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know if she's gone on to do other things, but she definitely has it in her. I thought she was fantastic, too.
Mm-hmm.
Another just natural.
There is an alternate ending that they shot because the movie ends with him and Ramona figuring things out and they pass through the door again and mm-hmm. that's the movie. There is an alternate ending where he ends up with Knives instead, which goes off of, you know, that departs from the ending of the book.
Right.
They filmed it because they weren't sure and it was kind of a last minute decision to leave in the book ending. But, because it's out there, it has then, like, divided people of who they wanted Scott to end up with.
I don't know if he really deserved either one.
He didn't.
He's a bit of a...
He's a jerk.
He's a jerk, really. So he doesn't...
Cheated, but he realizes that, which is kind of the interesting arc where he's like, I cheated on both of you. I hurt both of you. I was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel that at least allowed him to... Because they pretty much say, like, let's start over. Let's try this relationship right from the beginning, which is the whole going through the door. So there's at least that. It's not just, oh, it's over and he ended up with Ramona. Like, the character realizes something about himself.
That's true. That's true, yeah. In this instance, there is a little bit of an arc for our main character, mm-hmm. which we don't always get.
He just had to die to realize it.
Yeah.
I think the movie should have ended with Ramona dating Knives and Scott just standing there sad.
Oh.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
In the rain.
No, you know, he just has this solo rain cloud over him. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's just raining on him. He's just looking. They're super happy. They're living their best lives.
It fast forwards 10 years.
Who brought us together? What was his name? John Pilgrim, I think.
I don't know. Anyway, go set a plate. Wallace is coming over.
Oh my god, new spinoff. I'd watch that. I'd watch Knives and Ramona and their adventures.
Wallace would be like the Kramer. He just bursts into the door.
Wallace has a different boyfriend every time.
Yeah. I'm glad I finally watched it. And yeah, I think it's just one of these ones where this one's gonna have to stew, and I'm gonna have to, maybe the more I learn about a lot of the stuff it referenced, the more I'll get it. I have a feeling I'm going to, like, watch something or learn something, and I'm going to pick a scene in that movie and go, oh, I get that now. Yeah. It's going to make it better. Andy, thank you very much for joining us. This has been awesome.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. This was a blast. And, you know, I'm always available because I'm a loser. I got nothing better to do. So everyone wants someone to, you know, come voice their opinion, let me know.
Excellent.
This was a blast, and I can't say how much I appreciate that you had me be a part of it, and I can't wait to listen to it back and hear how much of what I said you edited out.
Well, when it comes to this show, I don't edit much. I just can't be bothered. Excellent. Well, we really appreciate it. Yeah, we'll definitely have to have you back on again.
I'll be looking forward to it. I'll keep my ear to my Gmail.
Excellent.
If you've got a movie you want to recommend.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, fire us a few suggestions.
Yeah. Oh my god. God, I actually just watched the most ridiculous movie. I should make you guys watch it just to talk about it.
That's what we do to each other.
Yeah.
Do you have a minute for me to just throw it out there?
Yeah.
Unless you're running away. I was talking to my new neighbor. He just moved in about 2 weeks ago, and we started talking about, you know, common interests, and I mentioned I like kung fu movies. And he recommends a movie called Big Brother. Have you heard of this movie?
I've heard of it.
This movie is, and I believe it takes place in China. I believe it's a Chinese movie. It's basically the Chinese version of Stand and Deliver,
mm-hmm.
with a little bit of kung fu mixed in. And it's so, it's one of those movies that it's so bad it's good. Almost. but I sat and I watched this entire movie, and it really is, I started to feel like it was either a tongue-in-cheek, like, ironic twist on Stand and Deliver, or quite possibly a propaganda film. Either way, it was an amazing thing to watch, and if I can make a recommendation, you guys should just definitely watch that and discuss that movie, because it's just so good it's bad, so bad it's good.
Excellent. All right. All right, well, then I guess that will do it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Again, Andy, thank you for joining me. Matt, thanks for coming by again. And thanks for suggesting Andy join us, because this has been a blast.
He knows things.
Yeah, excellent.
I know things. I'm smart. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yep. So that's going to do it for this episode. We'll be back in a couple weeks. Till then, bye, everybody.